I'm a McGann, but probably not the one you're expecting. And you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
APP Services, Blavasi at boop1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 404. I'm Adam, and objection! Here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Forget. Erase memory banks concerning tennis. Memory erased.
Was that supposed to be K9?
Affirmative.
I don't remember K9 having an American accent, but never mind, we'll move on. Yes, this week we're going to be...
In a few more episodes... K9's going to have a completely different voice.
Yes. But, yeah, so today we're going to be looking at the Stones of Blood from The Key to Time. It's a shame that Debbie can't make it because she's decided to go up to the hospital, and Mary can't make it because I think she might have forgot to set her alarm or something on those lines. So it's just me and Kirby. We could have done this on Sunday, after all, couldn't we, Kirby?
Yes.
Yes. But it would have been awkward for me because my studio here was still in a bit of a heap because Deb had been to a bridal show. But we'll get
started. Did you start the live stream?
Yes, I got started a live stream ages ago. I'm going to turn this cup around so I'm advertising Marks and Spencer. There we go. All right.
Not that I think any Americans are going to be awake.
Americans will have heard of Marks and Spencer. Okay, well, nobody's watching, so it doesn't really matter. I can be as rude as I like. Mwahaha. Stones of Blood, episode one, or part one, as it says on the video.
Nice wobbly TARDIS.
Oh, you're always criticising. Let's have a bit of the music. There we go. Okay, so after the title sequence, so yeah, the TARDIS is wobbling around, and the Doctor's trying to work out how to put the bits that they already have, the Key to Time, together. Don't really think they need to do that, because they probably need to put it together at the end of the... experience, but nevertheless he's trying, and he plugs the little rod, inserts his rod into the TARDIS console.
What? Yes.
And then we see a spooky sort of moonlit scene where some druidy type people are doing a sacrifice, and we have this woman who's going, I'm all spooky.
Kaliak.
And Romana changes into a Peaky Blinders costume. And they...
What?
Never mind, Kirby. And they...
Explain yourself.
Peaky Blinders. I'm pretty sure it's either a Netflix program or an Amazon Prime program, but I'm sure you can find it. It's about a... I think it's about a gang in the 1920s or 30s in Britain up north. They all wear these peak... caps.
And, okay.
So anyway, the Doctor and Romana. Oh, I can't remember.
Alundar.
No, I said it wrong. Anyway, they land in a field, and they go in search of the missing segment, and they end up in a stone circle, and then this grey-haired lady turns up, and
she's wonderful.
She's wonderful, but it's quite funny and cringeworthy when she clearly is struggling with the lines. It almost reminds me of the you probably don't remember a program, it was called Bruce Forsyth's Generation Game many years ago, when they used to get members of the public to just randomly do scenes, comedy scenes, and they used to write the lines everywhere deliberately, so as he could, you know, on bits of clothing or whatever. I can imagine that she had that sort of around the studio.
I didn't get a vibe that she was trying to remember the lines at all. I got a vibe that she was simply old, and
there's a bit of that
part of the acting.
It was a bit of that, but I she was struggling with the lines, but it was good acting and she was great. And immediately when obviously she meets Tom Baker, there's a rapport, and it works really nice. And then the very smarmy Vivian Faye turns up in her pink suit. It's beautifully smarmy, and it's perfect for the part. And
yes.
I absolutely love her in this. Just so sort of charming. And she would have actually, when they were going to make the Master a woman in these days, she would have been a perfect actress to play a female Master. in the 1970s, because this was just brilliant, evil but suave and sophisticated, charming acting. Fantastic stuff. So that's got me off on the right foot straight away.
Even when she was Silver.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about her in that suit. It just reminded me of something. But anyway, yeah, so but it's nice straight away. We've got three strong female characters in a Doctor Who story in 1978. That doesn't happen very often, does it? So, yeah, so they go about doing some archaeological measurements while... there's you. There's you doing your sort of chanting and stuff. And I don't know how you got into this. Or this was a few years ago, Kobe, so you're looking a bit younger there.
What?
That chap with the tash and the...
stuff. I no longer have...
I'm in big trouble, man. It's me. Bear with... Hello. Oh, I thought you said 20 past. Okay. Okay. Yes, dear.
You get to wander off.
Okay, I shall. Yeah. Okay. Bye. Yeah. So Kirby, guess what?
What?
For the first time ever, you're going to have to take over doing this bit of the show all on your own. Hey! Remember, we're live on air.
Why don't we just wait until you come back?
We can't, because I'm going to write a little note back in 10 minutes.
No, we'll just wait.
No, we won't. We're live on air. You've got to talk. Right, and you're really good at talking, too. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to put this...
Well, should I? Here. There'll be no quiz.
Won't be a quiz, but you can talk about... No, you know where you got up to? We're in the... where are we? We're in the... yeah, that chap looks a bit like you that's doing his chanting. And
he does not look like me.
I'm afraid he does, actually. Right, there we go.
I no longer have a mustache anyway.
No, well, you did a while back. Where's my keys?
You're still going to have to edit this section.
Because I'll have to listen to it, but I'm sure you can... Oh, God, just imagine you're on stage doing some sort of panel. Hang on, the dog's going to be sent
here. I usually... Whatever.
Yes, okay. Get in there. I'll get you in a minute.
So anyway, but so thing, on, thing
I
is,
I haven't left you. I can't find my keys.
Go, leave.
I'm looking
go
for
on.
My keys, Kirby.
Huh?
I need my keys. I can't drive the car without them. Right,
the
keys.
Okay. Time, yes.
Right, goodbye. I'll see you soon. Be a good boy.
So anyway, oh boy, I'm in a bit of a pickle here. I don't think I've ever done the show completely alone. Where's Mary? Let me see if I can find Mary and pull her into this thing. Mary. Anyway, I guess I'll just keep going with the story. The standing stones are... Where are these things? I remember there was a video podcast a few years ago where he went and visited these stones. So I really want to visit England one of these days and go to a whole bunch of stone circles and Doctor Who locations. .net is a great resource, as I am having issues with my browser here. Yes. Anyway, yeah, these are the Rollright stones in Oxfordshire. And, they're actually depicting the main druid guy smoking on TV. I guess you could still smoke on TV back in those days. Because they did, I noticed in the info text that they mentioned that at one point, right before the doctor was to be executed, that they were going to offer him a last cigarette, and he objected to that because of he was such an influence on kids. So that's why he makes the reference to candy, I believe it is. So, this whole Raven thing also seemed to be completely dropped as the story continued. half these stones in the section, half the stones on location, well, not half of them, about four or five of them, not just the three that they have pushed around by crew members, are added to the Roll Right stones. So I guess they truly do need to go and recount them, because the number is wrong in this story. And Romana is walking towards the cliff edge and the ocean, and they are very, very far from the ocean. In reality, it is a cliff edge, but it's very nice stock footage. But it's not very much of a cliff. It's maybe 4 feet down to the bottom, because when the doctor's pulling her back up, she's just crouching. In fact, part of it might have been in the studio. I'm not sure. So anyway, let me check to see if Mary's decided to join us yet. Ah! Romana has fallen down 3 or 4 feet. The end of episode one. And as I continue to wait to see what's going on, DeVries, that's the guy's name. And story episode two, or part two, the doctor is very funny as he's being a potential sacrifice. The business about the sterilization of the knife, etc. So we are truly getting into the Tom Baker comedy half hour by this point. And this story is very interesting because it's almost like one of the six-parters, where you've got this real change between the first one part and the other part, but it's very jarring because I really like the druid sections, and the spaceship sections aren't that great. And moving on with the nicely lit stones. I think that these night scenes, are these actually in the real stones? Or are they in in the studio? I'm not sure. Because it kind of looks studio. Yeah, that had to have been studio where they were sacrificing. Because it shifts to on film in the next scene when K-9 is out there rolling along his hidden boards so he can actually get over the ground. And, that the doctor rescuing Romana using his scarf reminds me, the doctor wanted Tom Baker wanted his scarf to be even longer. So they took two of the regular scarves and decided to sew them together. So this is his longest scarf ever. And in some scenes you can actually see where they sewed them together. Yeah, some of these outside... Oh, when they're at the top of the cliff, they found some really nice footage of a sunset, but unfortunately they'd already established that it was way after dark, so they realized it as they were filming. And Tom Baker quickly stuck his head in front of the sunset, so it makes a nice image. But it is kind of out of place. I suppose most people would notice it. I didn't notice it back when I first saw the story ages and ages ago. It's real strange how I only saw like two episodes of the Key to Time back in the 80s and didn't really see all of it until just a couple of months ago when Fred and I decided to watch everything. And, let's see. I wonder if Adam's going to want to go over all the same stuff again. And, La. He does, the main druid looks nothing like me, and besides, I no longer have a mustache. So, and I'm gray, and he still has color in his hair. Now, I thought the moving stones were a little strange, but it's a cool concept. But there, when they break through walls and stuff, there's several times you can see the crewmen pushing them along. They did a good job with fiberglass work, though. And, where is this place? The manor, DeVries' Manor. Oh, that's right. It's Reed College. Reed Business School. Is DeVries' Manor. And back to the story. Poor guy's been killed by a stone. I guess that means he's stoned. I don't have Adam's sound effects here. And back inside the cottage. Oh, they actually had a real fire in the fireplace, apparently, in this cottage set. This is a set. It is not on location. And you can definitely tell that later when one of the stones breaks through the door and everything wobbles. I've heard people say that the wobbling sets is a myth, but no, it's not a myth. You can definitely see wobbles all over the place. And some great banter between the three women. And I should turn on the subtitles so I can tell what they're saying here. I could even do this. I could turn on the sound. Just for a second.
Henry VIII, he led the way of all flesh with the dissolution of the monasteries.
Okay, anyway, I'll turn that back off. So, we keep going with all the druid stuff, and then we have poor K9 being dissected. And this is the prop. Hello.
Hi.
What's going on? Oh, he's back.
Front and sides too.
That's my joke.
I'm going to exactly call it a joke. There you go. Come in, magic. Come on, quickly. Magic.
Oh, he's on. I tried to keep it up there, but it was very rambling.
I beg your pardon? Oh, I got a viewer. It's amazing. I'm not even in the room, and I got a viewer. Oh dear. Right, so even me.
Well, did they say anything? I don't have the live stream up.
Right, have they said anything? I've got live chat. It says, how'd you get it up? Top chat. No, just live chat, isn't it? Well, nobody said anything as yet, but it looks as if I have a viewer. Unless it's you, of course, which would be. Unless it's me.
No, it's not me.
So, where did it get up to?
Pretty much the middle of episode 2. Okay. And they're taking all the bits and pieces and the paper out of the middle of K9's lightweight prop because he's been sort of damaged by the stones.
Is that the K9 prop they used in the previous series? That was, you remember they replaced the prop, didn't they? That's why they had him leave, didn't they?
No. They have two K9s by this point. There's one which is hollow.
Yeah.
that he is, because if they need to pick him up and move him around, and then they have one which has the motors in it. And in this case, when there's circuit boards and stuff, and also appears to be pieces of paper inside the canine, okay, that's the hollow one, which they can pick up.
So are we up to the bit where Vivian Faye is charming Romana Dravatnalunda and Dravatnalunda, by the way, apparently. Who's the other? Oh, yeah.
Past that. Now Vivian Faye is pouring blood onto stones. Now, one thing I'm not quite sure about, and I said this during my ramble, is some of these sacrificial segments, I believe those might be on a set.
Oh, what?
Set.
Oh, you mean not out in the stone circle?
Not out in the stones.
Ah.
Because they look videotaped versus film. You know how you can always tell?
Yeah. You may be right, but anyway. So, like you say, where we got up to. So, oh yeah, there's the bit where Romana's taken K-9 back to the TARDIS. And she wanders out because she hears the doctor calling. The doctor, meanwhile, has found loads of paintings of Vivian Faye through the ages.
So you're going back to where we left off.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. No.
She,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, she's gone back to the TARDIS, and she goes out into the woods because she hears... Oh, it's not the doctor's voice. It's something going on in the circle. And Vivian Faye gets particularly sinister and charming and suave and says, oh, is there something going on in it? Oh, come on, let's go and have a look, shall we? And, of course, she then disappears. End of that episode. Episode 3 picks up more or less where it left off. And, she disappears. And then the Doctor and the Professor are looking at the paintings while an ogre grinds its way, God knows how it got through the door, grinds its way through the arch and makes rumbling noises.
I had made a mention while you were out that this is one of the places where you can see the crewman pushing it from behind.
So yeah.
Hiding.
Okay. So they leg it, because obviously the ogre can move particularly fast. And... they go up to the stone circle and somehow they manage to get one to fall off the cliff into the sea. And
yet later they've already established that there's only three of them, but later three are there again. So I guess it swam back to shore.
Yep. Who says they can't swim? They can sort of move, so they must be able to. Maybe they can anyway. So anyway, the doctor and the professor turn
the
up.
The original design, they were actually going to be. Kind of humanoid stones with arms and legs, and they kind of hug you to death.
Your typical monster always has to have human shape, so that somebody can
actually this. I like this better, although they're still silly.
Yeah, but obviously Doctor Who more or less broke the mold in regards to, you know, actors in costumes with the Daleks, because it wasn't blatantly obvious there was a person inside, even though we knew there was, because of the shape of the Dalek. It was quite an innovative thing for a monster. Vivian Faye gets a costume change into a feathery thing, and the Doctor then knows that she's obviously some sort of space... She has some sort of link with the spaceship of some variety. So starts building a rather cool, typical Doctor-type machine, which I really love, and on an old camera tripod, which is love the way they these things together.
One thing I like about the whole building of its scene, you know, he sends the professor off to get some crystals, and she brings some crystals back, and he pours them in, and you'll notice that there's a cloth covering most of it.
Yeah.
And he rips the cloth off, and the globe on the back is filled with crystals. But they did the cloth thing so that it was disguising the fact that the crystals he poured in weren't the same crystals that were already built into it.
Ah. Now, I just apologize to anybody listening to the show. I accidentally knocked one of my camcorder batteries onto my keyboard, which therefore made it go boop. didn't like it very much. It was accidental.
Are you sure we're still recording?
Well, I don't record using the computer. I record using separate recording devices. So, yes.
I remember back when you used to record on the videotape.
Yes. I used to record what was it? What was the original show called? Hoovy and Anorak. I used to record that on videotape. And then it was then recorded on the video camera, but it was a digital video camera, Kirby. It had an inbuilt hard drive. So that was what it was recorded on. So it was always a file it was recording rather than tape. But when me and Alicia did Hoovy and Anorak, or me, Alicia, and Ben, because Ben wasn't one of them, that was recorded via a very superb camcorder, which was then was a broadcast quality camcorder. Fantastic little machine, that big machine.
Yeah, well, we're done talking about the story. You're going to have to tell more about the convention. You're getting some really cool guests.
You're sort of going off on tangents now. Back to the story.
Well, that's my job.
Yeah, so the Doctor builds a machine with K-9's guidance, because K-9 can tell whether it's any good or not, and they go up to the stone circle and find a way of beaming the Doctor up to the spaceship, while K-9, who's just recovered from his little injury, tries to hold back the Ogre. It's a really cool scene, model shot, where the Doctor's looking out a window in that scene. So he's arrived on the spaceship, and there's an exterior shot of the spaceship, which I've gone to all the trouble of superimposing or CSOing a shot of the model exterior with the Doctor peeping out the window, which I thought was really, really good for atmospheric reasons. Yes, Kirby?
Master?
Yes?
Not just that, but they designed the set first and before making the model, and then the model maker actually took the trouble to match up the shape of the ship with the sets and how all the sets fit together, which is very nice, because a lot of these cases you've just got corridors and they don't necessarily match up with ships.
This set reminds me of one of the Doctor Who stories from Series 11. Was it Series 11? The one where they're on that medical spaceship, the title of which escapes me for the moment, you know, the one where they had that weird little creature.
The one with Stitch, yes.
Yeah, it's very simple, although it's not quite as white, but it's very white nevertheless. So the Doctor pokes around, because I know Romana's, that's because Romana got transported. I forgot to mention this, Romana got transported up to the ship and she's in shackles next to a dead body. Or is it a dead robot? I don't know, he's dead something.
It's a dead robot.
Of course, at this stage, Vivian Faye's gone her to a silver look now. She certainly changes costume a lot during this story. And
I pointed out on the Facebook page, but that console, you know, the Doctor is showing computer graphics of how the ship is above the stone circle and everything, but that console that he's sitting at is one of the central console from UFO's moon base. It's one of those pieces that they kept recycling over and over again. I read someplace that they used pieces of the UFO sets in 16 or 26 Doctor Who episodes, something like that.
Doesn't surprise me in the slightest. But anyway, so the Doctor finds Romana, undoes the shackles, but if you notice the wall behind Romana with the sort of triangular shape stuff, that appears in Doctor Who and Blake 7 quite a lot, so keep a lookout for that, that particular piece of set. So they get out. And
I really wish Blake 7 were available for me to see here.
Oh, I'm sure you can get it somehow. So the Doctor accesses a computer which shows a rudimentary diagram of the ship hovering above the stone circle.
hey, that's cutting-edge computer graphics for the time.
Well, it was really, but it was really quite a good. It looked good, even though it was obviously poor graphics, but it looked good for this episode. And then, meanwhile, K-9 is trying to hold back the Ogre, but his batteries are running low again. And then they destroy the Doctor's piece of kit, so they can't get them back, apparently, essentially. Meanwhile, there's a couple doing rude things in an orange tent, and the bloke
actually had spare budget to
get a couple of extra cast members.
Hire two more people for an afternoon.
Yeah. The woman, she was in a comedy series, but I think it might have been Live of Birds or something like that. Curly-haired woman. There's something happens with the stone circle. The stones, Ogre attack them, and
they both touch the rocks rather stupidly, and you see a skeletal hand, and they scream, and they die. I think that was quite a good scene. I think they could have lived without it, but I think maybe they were running short on this episode. But it was quite a good scene to see what, you know, why they were such a scary creature. And I suppose they had to... Pardon?
Master, the scene... Okay, you see them... you see them die there, but the hand part was actually filmed many days later when one of the stones was in the middle of the spaceship set.
Oh, okay. Okay. The man,
I believe it was one of the crew members' hands, one of the production assistants.
Anyway, so back on the spaceship, the Doctor inadvertently lets out these little light sort of creatures, which are apparently sort of some sort of judgmental system, who have been in cage for many years. And then Vivian Faye comes back to Earth. Oh, yeah, she blasts the Doctor's machine. I beg your pardon. I said that a bit early. Yes?
They had not quite established... Well, I don't think they really established that the TARDIS translation circuit allows the Doctor to read anything. But I did notice that he couldn't read the seal. And it was later established that he could read stuff like that, except for extremely ancient inscriptions like in Where the Devil Was in the 10th Doctor story.
Oh. Okay, well, maybe the TARDIS was on Earth and... Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter, does it? Anyway, so, yeah, so Vivian Faye comes down and blasts the machine and comes back onto the spaceship and does a very evilly sort of glary, smiley thing. Because she thinks she's getting the upper hand, because obviously the Doctor has he's been rounded up as a criminal. So episode 4 is essentially the Doctor on trial, and
is it the trial of a Time Lord?
Yes, it is the trial of a Time Lord. Yes, Vivian Faye sat there watching as an audience, and of course she not thinking she might get involved in the whole system. K-9, meanwhile, has a nap, but he soon wakes up after a little bit of a recharge and says, right, we're going to fix the machine. Well, you are, with my help, to the professor. And so the Doctor does his... and the creatures thingies do their little trial scenes. Now, I do say, I was trying to avert my eyes of Vivian Faye's costume here to her eyes rather than... Yeah, it was rather sexy. Shall we say, sexy costume, especially in the silver. Didn't do her any harm, did it? She looked great. So anyway, they do fix the machine and they play around with it. And of course, Vivian Faye's trying to hide her true identity, but the justice system, we don't need to ask her any questions because we want to do that at the end of the episode, sort of thing, you know. But the Doctor tries his hardest to sort of manipulate things a little bit. By putting off his death. He must have put off his death about 5 times during this episode. So it's a bit like Brexit, actually, being put off as many times as it was.
I was a bit confused when the Doctor and Vivian Faye are both knocked out. Was that actually supposed to be the execution and he just happened to live?
I think so. I think it's because he grabbed Vivian Faye, didn't it? It sort of short fuse the execution because they weren't allowed to execute Vivian Faye at that point. So
it's a bit confusing.
Yes, it is. So why did you write it that way?
What?
Anyway, so yeah.
Oh, and speaking of hiding things, when she's knocked out like that.
Yes.
One of the crew members noticed, and they had to go in and quickly rearrange her dress to cover her legs because she didn't have silver on her legs.
Oh, I wouldn't mind seeing that. Anyway, back to the episode. Yeah, so Romana gets, because they fix the machine, and Romana gets beamed back to Earth.
You want legs, all you have to do is find Lillian, I think.
Yes, hashtag Lillian's legs. so, yeah, and then, like I say, the execution is supposed to happen, but the Doctor grabs Vivian Faye, and it short fuses it. So they, at that point, because she's unconscious, the Doctor persuades them to read her mind, and that's when they find out she's a baddie. and she gets to get sentenced to be a rock, basically.
What was that?
It's my phone going off. And it says, oh, it's a message from the school. I've got a Gmail come through from a certain Alan Butcher, which is going to be interesting, isn't it, Kirby?
Oh, I get to read it.
You do. Any news from Mary?
Nope.
Nope. So Mary gets one of these because she did. One of the reasons we're going to do it is because everybody agreed to do it.
And she's the one who was saying, hey, it was better for her to do it on Monday morning.
Well, maybe that was the previous Monday morning. I don't know. Didn't she say she was off? Anyway, like I say, the Vivian Faye gets sentenced to be a rock for all time. Rather, she'd been sentenced to be a rock, but not on this planet, to be fair. But there she is.
And why are they so eager to execute the doctor?
Yeah, not her.
But they want to execute her.
I know, because that is a bit weird. But anyway, before she gets turned into a rock, the doctor grabs. I wondered what he was going to grab for a minute then, but he grabs her necklace. From her neck, which is obviously the segment to the key to time, and
it was obvious. Not until the
no, does, when at the point he grabbed
it, they didn't even really pay much attention to the looking for the key to time.
Yes, I meant at the point that he grabbed it. It was obvious why he was grabbing it. That's what I meant, but not necessarily in the story.
The info text, by the way, in some of the scenes where. Mm. Romana and the professor are standing outside of the TARDIS, mentions that it's very cold that day, and
her nipples were sticking out. I wasn't going to mention that because she was a distinguished old lady actress, so I wasn't actually going to mention that, but thanks for pointing that one out, Kirby.
I pointed out on the Facebook page too.
You did you? Okay. Right, so yeah, and that's it. And there's a very strange scene when the TARDIS dematerializes where she's sort of, that's my phone again, does some strange expressions to the camera and stuff, and then they go and take the segment, or sorry, the necklace, and touch it with the rod, and it changes into a segment, and they have to do the I can't fit the segments together scene again at the end of the episode. So, and that essentially ends the Stones of Blood, I have to say about
one
this.
One thing I'm going to pay attention to this watching of the whole Key to Time is, you know, we didn't see the second segment get changed.
We don't have to see it, do we?
No.
So they made a point of putting it on there.
I think we see all of them except for the second.
Well, I think they made a point of putting it on this one because I think they were appeared to be, I may be wrong, but they appeared to be running short on time. No sign of Mary now, so I think we've got to pass the stage where we actually need her now, but there you go. Yeah, so Stones of Blood, I actually quite like this story. I like the characters in it. I like the fact there's lots of women. I love the way it moves from one place to another. It's not stuck in, even though you think it's a stone circle, you're in a spaceship, there's that trial thing, you've got K-9 being blasted up and he's in it a lot. I do like K-9, so I do like stories that have a lot of him in it. And of course the rapport between the professor and the doctor, everything about it is really good fun. There's a couple of things, minor things you can say, orbly sets slightly stupid bits of the plot, like you say about, you know, why are they so keen on executing the doctor and not the murderer villain woman who just gets turned into a rock. But I suppose they really wanted to have her all the way along being turned into a rock.
Oh, it doesn't bother me.
No,
it's,
no,
I'm not this is something I noticed.
Yeah. But I love it. I really like this story. Obviously I said that Pirate Planet is one of my favourite Doctor Who stories of all time, but this isn't far behind it. I really do enjoy Stones of Blood. It's probably one of my favourite Earthbound stories, at least. So that's it. What did you think of it then, Kirby?
Oh, I really like this one. This, back in the day when I was watching Doctor Who for the first time, for some reason I only saw two of the Key to Time stories. This was one of them, and liked it back then. Now, as I was saying, oh, you sent me the pictures. Lovely. my watch just buzzed, and I looked down, and oh, it's the Multitudinous.
Indeed. Look forward to that in a few moments.
This, as I was saying, while you were out gallivanting around for 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
One thing about this one which is odd is the change between the first two episodes and the second two episodes, where you think you're in this nice druidic thing, and then it's almost like one of the six-parters, where you've got four episodes which are set one way and two episodes set a different way.
Yes.
It doesn't work quite as well with the two-parter, because I kind of wanted more of the druid stuff. And you end up with the spaceship, which it's a cool-looking spaceship and everything, but it's quite a clash. It doesn't bother me that much. I enjoy it. I enjoy this story. I love the professor.
Yeah.
She's great. This was Beatrix Lehmann's last role ever.
Yeah.
And there's just some silly stuff with the druid thing, because they did not go back to it, which are completely left out. You don't know why the ravens and or the crows, they actually call them crows.
That's because they are one. Crows.
By the way, those crows were all, when you see four of them flying up in the sky, that wasn't stock footage. They hired someone who had four trained crows.
There are
crows.
Trained animals around, Kirby, so yes, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest. They probably had trained crows for that Doctor Who story where the Doctor and Bill encounter some Roman soldiers, if you remember.
Yes.
A couple of years ago. Trained crows. And maybe even the crow
I really like this story. It's maybe my third favorite of the Key to Time.
Okay.
My favorite is, of course, Pirate Planet.
Okay. Good. Right, so there we go. Before we move on to feedback, we're going to have a look at... nobody's actually posted anything on the live feed, although I think it appeared to be have a couple of... think people with less stuff to do on a Monday morning and actually watching this show. I've got something that's come through on audio, and it goes like this.
Hello there, 20 megabyters. You all right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right, The Stones of Blood by David Fisher. You know, I was never enamoured by this particular story arc, the Key to Time. I thought it were a bit pants, actually. Now, in fact, let me rephrase that. The idea was good, it was a fantastic idea, but the stories themselves were absolute naff, in my opinion. Hardly a spectacle, hardly gripping, and just didn't captivate me. But I think, with that said, I think The Stones of Blood is probably the redeeming factor, if there's any at all, for the Key to Time story arc, honestly. Yeah, I found the story itself a little bit eerie, atmospheric, and the characterization of Amelia Rumford was absolutely outstanding. I felt that she actually out eccentricized the Doctor himself on many occasions. I thought the concept of druids, of sacrifice, of eerie moors, brilliant for a Doctor Who story, but somewhat let down to the shift to the hyperspace prison ship. Yeah. I thought the Ogre were fantastic as villains, and I remember watching the documentary on the Stones of Blood DVD, and how the production team mentioned how they wanted to do away with simply having a man in a rubber suit to do as a monster. And I think in this particular aspect they did fantastically with the Ogre. They did. Absolutely wonderful. But with that said, for me, this story is one I've never really gone back to watch again. Simply a Marmite story, really. But with that said, whether it's good or bad, this story does hold some nostalgic reminiscence for me. It does. It was the very last story before I moved to Australia that I saw in the UK. I think part four of this story was broadcast on the 18th of November 1978. And on the 21st of November 1978, I was wrenched away, uprooted, much against my will, to come to this strange land of Australia. I thought I'd never see Doctor Who again. I was absolutely gutted. But lo and behold, I came to Australia, and 3 months later, they broadcast the image of the Fandal. I thought I'd won the lottery. Have a lovely day. Take care.
Billy Kirkbright, everyone.
Yay.
Marvellous. Thank you, Billy. More from Billy one day. Right then, see what we had.
And he also, I believe, commented on the Facebook page underneath the link to the face to the YouTube. He says, about to watch Stan and Ollie, can't stay.
I want to see that film, you know. Deb wouldn't let me go. Deb wouldn't let me go. It's a BBC movie, so I'm hoping the BBC will show it at Christmas. But, yes, not happy. I wanted to go. I said it quite clearly. That's one of her catchphrases. But she wouldn't let me go and say, where's the money coming from? But no, we're going to see Bohemian Rhapsody because Isabella wants to go and say, although it's brilliant. So I'd happily go and see Bohemian Rhapsody. But I wanted to see Stan and Ollie. I was a big fan and still am of Laurel Hardy in the 70s. Me and my wife, mate Gary Mills, used to reenact scenes from their films. Love Laurel and Hardy. Moving on. Right then, nice. Yeah, so you did a call out for some feedback. So we got, you can read the Laurie Nix one, because it'll probably sound better coming from you.
Okay, hang on. I need to expand it so I can read it.
That's what she said. Oh, I see, sorry.
Laurie says, I enjoyed this one, even though it is derivative of other episodes in both Tom and Pertwee's tenure. Namely, because I'm a folk horror nut, it's not the best folk horror I've seen in Tom Baker's run, by far, but saved by the hyperspace episode, which makes it just different enough to be interesting. Romana is setting in, high heels notwithstanding. Though I'm not sure if it's due to the script or character development. Some of these lines I could hear Sarah Jane saying. So I'm wondering if this is an old script that has been revamped. The Fourth Doctor is at his best with Rumford in the trial sequence. The discussion of hyperspace is a hoot. The only thing that truly annoys is why the fake Kaliak, really more the Morrigan, turned into a standing stone. Doesn't she deserve death?
Absolutely.
Seems I said the same thing, didn't
yes.
I? Excuse me. They were ready to kill the Doctor for opening a door. It's not my fave Key to Time episode, but not the worst. Give it a 5 out of 10.
Yes, I mean, essentially being turned into a rock was death, to be fair. I can't imagine her not being turned back again. Jeff Waddle said, her and the villain... Lebanese.
Lesbian.
Oh, right. And then Laurie Nick said, Jeff Waddle, don't assume things just because they invited Romana back to their cottage for tea in Lavoche or Lavish or whatever it is. And then you went on about the reused sets from UFO. And I used to love the UFOs and UFOs. I thought they were really cool. Not so much about
it's a great series.
It was. I used to like Space 1999 as well. That was a great series.
I did not like Space 1999.
Tough, well, I did. Whose opinion counts?
But let me finish. But I am willing to try to watch again because I think I will like it better now.
I'm telling you now, I'm not going to be watching it again, but I did like it at the time. Lillian Robbins says, my third favourite segment of the Key to Time. Some great stuff, Professor Rumford, the implied lesbian relationship. Some experimental stuff, the Megara lights. Some poorly thought out ideas, the Ogre. Altogether entertaining and watchable. Maybe I should cosplay Silver Villian. Yes, you blimmin' well should. Might be to get to see your face in some of these pictures, Lillian.
She's got pictures of her face.
Not when she's showing her lingerie and not lingerie. Okay. Sorry, her leg pictures. It's always cut off. The top bit. I have seen her face. It's very pretty. So I think it would actually attach to her body quite nicely. Anyway, Billy Kirkbright says, Lillian Robbins, some poorly thought out ideas. The Ogre. I actually thought the Ogre was one of the most redeeming factors. And then Lillian Robbins said, Billy Kirkbright, fiberglass stones. Well, they were a creature, weren't they? So they just looked, oh, never mind. I'm not going to argue. Fiberglass stones.
That's why she puts quotes around stones.
Pushed around by visible crew members. Nope. Sometimes in 70s Doctor Who, you have to, suspend certain parts of belief and disbelief, or whatever you want to call it. Billy Kirkbright, Lillian Robbins, the charm of classic Who, Ian Kirk. The Ogre were rolling stones. They were popular once. I think you missed that up either. Yeah. And then he said...
You know something? I never saw any any moss on them.
Yes. Anyway, so Ian Kirk says, Tom Baker is in the comedy part of his... Tom Baker is in the comedy part of his time on Doctor Who, pulling out a wig from his pocket. Time Lord trials can be worse, though. Perhaps Mary Tam's astrologer advised her to wear red for this story.
the idea of a spaceship in hyperspace linked to something on Earth was reused in David Tennant's era, The Girl in the Fireplace and Matt Smith's Curse of the BS. And then he says, not worth plugging in my microphones this week to say so little.
Obviously yeah, doesn't I also work. Mentioned while you were running around that we're right in the middle of the Tom Baker comedy half hour.
Yes, indeed. Right then, now the dogs are shouting to come in. So while I go let the dogs back in, you can embark on your mission to read out Alan T. Butcher's feedback.
No, it's the dogs that bark. Thing. The multitudinous stones incarnadine or rumple of the Megara, dear 20 megabiters. The Stones of Blood is, of course, a closely studied parody of creaky, inflexible, and staid justice systems. Here we see the system spend a great deal of time in an anodyne crime committed in ignorance by the doctor, almost to the exclusion of any attention to the real criminal in the midst of the court. Sisera Diplos has managed to dodge justice over such a long period that those intended to secure... Hang on, I gotta scroll up.
Oh, was that in the script? I've got to scroll up.
No. Those intended to secure proper legal sanctions wholly miss her behind an elaborate smokescreen that
they
she
miss her behind? I didn't get to see her behind.
As with real legal systems, futile misdemeanors can be pursed... I think he meant pursued. I think in a typo. To the nth degree, whilst it is sometimes necessary to repeatedly draw to the authorities' attention the obvious greater miscreant before they are finally tackled. It should be noted that while some seem to think the Megaras are a bit silly as legal protagonists, it must point out that the contemporary British system employs a lot of people in ridiculous powdered horsehair wigs, whereas the Megara managed to say Romana Devaratna Lundar very competently and without stumbling or laughing. And it's not always easy to say Romana Devaratna Lundar without stumbling
he
or
thought Debbie
laughing.
Was reading this.
Romana Devaratna Lundar can be tricky until you get used to it. Which obviously I'm used to it.
Yes.
We also learn that at least one of the Megara
can't say that though, can you?
Was originally a denizen of Worthing near Littlehampton, who went on to be an actor before presumably turning into an airborne sparkly thing. I guess I'll have to look up one of the actors.
You will, yes.
By the way, when they were talking to each other and they were changing it into the electronic beep, 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 they were mostly saying pop, 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 pop to make the lights flash.
Oh.
And while the other one of them was saying pop, 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 the other one was reciting Greek poetry.
Oh. So did you interrupt Alan's feedback? That never happens.
Stone's Blood is quite a miasma of different styles, events, and narrative threads. Romana Devaratna Lundar has embedded herself well into the show, and somehow this tale hangs together, leaving no chance of being bored as the nature of the action keeps developing into something else. I can't help feeling there's an awful lot wrong with the story, but by some form of alchemy, all of it just makes it turn out weird and interesting. Even Beatrix Lehmann's very uneven performance simply comes over as eccentric and very charming. The serial is perhaps multiple episodes of Great Larceny Diplos, too short, in which we might have seen the 4,000-year history of the Caesar play out in progression to the mantle of Kaliak. Next up, Doctor Who and the Beowulf of Zinda, or the Archimandrite of Tara. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Thank you, Alan. Keep it coming. Right then, now we also had, remember last week, or last time, around about last week, I said we had Andrew Kamaltz, who sent my sort of description of how to say Romana Devaratna Lundar. Devaratna, yeah. How to say that. Yeah. I've lost confidence on how to say it now, but there you go. Remember he said, and I said, oh, I've never been trolled before. I was, of course, exaggerating. But he did write back. He said, Adam, it wasn't my intention to troll you or make you feel bad. I should have been kinder in my original message. I sincerely apologize for my rudeness and any.
Oh, then and any. There's more. And any bad feelings caused? Well, it was me just trying to make things entertaining for the listeners. And he said he's been a loyal listener for 3.5 years, and guess I originally forgot what drew me in the first place was Kirby's relentless calling you as master. I lost. More? There's more. Oh, there's more. I've got to have to use my wand to keep my place on this. I lost sight of the fact that the authoritarian routine has been a consistent part of your humour in the show as long as I've been listening. What do you mean authoritarian routine? It's what it is. It's not a routine. It's if there weren't me around keeping that lot in place, then we wouldn't have a show. Anyway, moving on. Incidentally, as long as I'm writing, the hardest I've ever laughed with any podcast, any show, not just yours, came in an episode last year during a quiz. You're asking questions about what happened in the previous week's show, and people kept guessing that Andy Nunney was responsible for certain comments, despite his reminding folks that he wasn't on the show at all.
And
he lost it when people kept guessing his name, and I laughed so hard even upon the second listen that my family thought I was having a stroke. Brilliant stuff, Andrew. Keep it coming, Andrew. Right then, that's great. So that's at the end of the feedback section of the show. We're going to cover a little bit of news, if we have any. I'm not quite sure.
Can I assume now that we are not having a quiz?
Of course we're not having a booming quiz. Who's going to win it if it's just you silly man?
And I deliberately didn't. I don't even know if we had a quiz last
time
we
did.
Yes,
we did. Right, then I've got to look back
through. But I did not go back and listen, because I've promised not to do that anymore.
Right, okay, so we have, I'm not sure if we did this last time, the BBC Radiophonic Music album re-release.
I don't remember mentioning that.
The 1968 album BBC Radiophonic Music is to be re-released in March on digital and vinyl by Silver Screen. Now, I'm not sure whether this is a album that Alistair lent me so as I could pick out some sound effects for the show many years ago. But yeah, that'd be quite a good one for the Layman Doctor Who fan.
Oh no, this is not the Doctor Who sound effects album.
No,
this is a music album. I've got the Doctor Who sound effects album on vinyl. Bought it way back.
You're right. There's lots of Delia Derbyshire stuff on it, but none of it Doctor Who. But yeah, if you're into that sort of stuff, I know certain people are.
Track 21 is old Zizi.
Shut up. Magic's clambering over my little back in 10 minutes sign. I'll have to chuck that in the bin there. There's more Lethbridge Stewart stories coming out. The Havoc Files 2 special edition. So good on them.
Cry
for doing
Havoc!
Those. Same to you. Win Breakfast with Jodie Whittaker and Mandip Gill. Comic Relief is offering one lucky winner the chance to have a special private breakfast with Jodie Whittaker on the set of Doctor Who. And Jodie Whittaker and her companion Mandip Gill would like to share a coffee and breakfast with you and a friend. Remember, they did this a while back then, where they had all the doctors, the living doctors, somebody. But the trouble is, I think Peter Davison wasn't available, so they had to have him via iPad on a FaceTime thing. Anyway, it was to just discuss the show, explore some theories, revisit some highlights. After breakfast, you will go on an hour tour of the Doctor Who set, watch the filming, and meet the stars. And get
awesome.
To speak to the crew who make the show.
Enter?
Pardon?
Are you going to enter?
No, I'll never win it. Will I?
It costs $10. Not £10.
Yeah. The offer is a prize in the second draw to raise money for Comic Relief. Entries can be made online, which cost £10 each. To enter, you will have to be over 18. It's obviously aiming Doctor Who as an adult show then, not a children's one. The guest may be under the age of 18, provided they are over 14. So you have to be a teenager to be a fan of Doctor Who now. And the winner is the parent or guardian. Other offers available include a private breakfast with Sir David Attenborough at the National History Museum, afternoon tea with the Queen and the rest of the royal family from The Crown. So that'll be a certain Oscar winner.
I would imagine, in that one. And a fry up with Louis Tomlinson in his favourite London cafe. Some good stuff there, none of which are going to win, so I'm probably not going to bother. Right, then, there's
it's a good charity. You should enter
it
anyway.
It is a brilliant charity, but I donate in other ways by buying red noses.
Did I ever mention that I passed by Richard Attenborough once, and I nodded at him and he nodded at me?
No, you didn't do that.
We were doing paperwork for going to China to adopt our first daughter, and we were in downtown Chicago, and they were filming the remake of Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh.
You know, he was playing Santa Claus.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
And he was walking over to some trailers. We were outside the building they were using as Macy's.
Yeah.
And we recognized him, and it was weird.
Yeah.
We're going, oh, that's Sir Richard Attenborough. Anyway.
Cool. No, you didn't mention that, but it got me thinking about something else, and I forgot what it was now, but never mind. Yes, the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, DWAS, is pleased DWAS. To... What?
DWAS.
I just said that. Is pleased to auction...
So did I.
Prints of three pieces of artwork by friend of the show and a massive contributor to the show, even though he's only ever been on one episode, Mr. Alistair Pearson. The Yay. Artwork was originally drawn for the Titan script books range in the early 1990s. It's not really drawn, it was more illustrated, to be fair. Only two prints of each picture will be available, one to be auctioned at the next DWAS event at the Capitol in April 2019, and the other open for bids at the eBay site now. There are three pictures. Talons of Weng Chiang and the Demons are both sold in aid of cystic fibrosis research, and the abominable snowmen is sold in aid of the Royal Theatrical Fund, a charity supported by Deborah Watling. Pictures can be signed and dedicated by Alistair Pearson for the winning bidders on request. And there's some pictures of his pictures there. There's been a passing. Graham Curry is a writer. He died at the age of 61. He wrote the Doctor Who story Happiness Patrol. Of course, it's now the name of a popular Doctor Who podcast, starring Sylvester McCoy.
The Happiness Patrol hasn't put out a episode in a couple of years now.
No, I'm just saying, but that's obviously it's spun off into a podcast.
I miss it because it was a really good show.
It was a good show, yes. Of course, we lost the TARDIS Tavern as well. Gone.
He's 61. He's only... Yeah, 2 years older than me.
And only 9 years older than me, right then. Trap Street, the third edition of fan publication Trap Street, is now available, co-edited by Dallas Jones and Roger Reynolds. Trap Street is a free Doctor Who e-zine. John Levine autobiography has been released. I'll tell you, that'd be worth buying, because he's slightly bonkers, but he's a very entertaining man. So I honestly get it, because he's had a very interesting life. He was sort of telling us about a lot of the things in his stand-up comedy routine. He's a very, very interesting man, so get John Levine.
One of these days, I want to go to a convention where he's a guest.
Yes. Who Talk, March releases. This month's Who Talk releases feature the legendary Daleks and the...
You're talking, I'm talking.
Reptilian Ice Warriors. So there's some stuff coming on there. I don't know what it's all to do with, but we're going to leave that at that. So that's Doctor Who news. Before we move on to the talk of sponsorships, we will now cover... have you got any viewers still? Let's have a look. We've got some viewers still. Nobody's saying anything. It's very unusual. We're going to move on to Fantasy.
Well, the Americans are asleep.
Be quiet. Fantasy.com. That's your fault. Maybe you say it wrong. South Fantasy Con. Why did I say got.com for? That was your fault. made it cock up the name of the own convention. Yeah, Fantasy Con, which is obviously the 24th and 25th August 2019 at Cowes Enterprise College. We can talk about what's been announced in the interim since we last recorded. We've had
all sorts of awesome stuff has been announced. Good grief.
How'd
you do this?
I don't know what you mean. Right then, so let's start with the initial announcement that our first celebrity guest is a friend of the show, Alistair Pearson, who had just been aforementioned in the news. Alistair Pearson will be going along to talk to fans, and also he'll be auctioning off some of his artwork for his charity, of which I don't actually know what his charity is at the moment, but I should, maybe, perhaps I should.
One
but
of the
he'll
ones
be there.
Probably just talking about.
Maybe. Possibly. But he'll be there. There will be some artwork, obviously printed artwork that he prints himself, so and signed by Alistair. He'll be auctioning that off for people who want to perhaps want to bid for the charity that he's talking about. Lord of Time Minicon will be there as a Doctor Who event within the event, but obviously there'll be other things not Doctor Who related. We're in talks with the Garrison, the Star Wars Garrison, to who have got some amazing handmade props and scenery, which it's just mind-boggling how good the stuff is. So I'm hoping that they're going to be along there. But after Alistair, we have the delightful introduction of Mr. Andrew Smith, who's also still friend of the show. He was on it many years ago, but he's coming down from Scotland to be at fantasy.com. I've said .com again! FantasyCon! I'll say that again. Andrew Smith has come into FantasyCon. And absolutely Yay. Thrilled that he's coming down. He obviously, if anybody doesn't know, I think Doctor Who fans tend to know quite a lot about Doctor Who, because Deb said, who is he? He was the youngest ever writer for the classic era, and he penned the first Adric story.
Of Adric.
Yes. I've forgotten the title.
I have too.
Oh, well, I'll come to
that. One of the reasons I've forgotten is because you're going to laugh. I've not seen it.
Full Circle is the title. Yeah.
Full Circle, yeah.
Penned Full Circle. So, yes, it's a very, very good story and has a great cast as well. So, but he's also a renowned Big Finish writer as well. So it's absolutely fantastic to have Andrew Downs. A very nice man. We have a very special and well-known stage host who's going to be looking after all the panels and quizzes and everything on the stage. You might have heard of him. Mr. Ben Shoveler will be there.
Yay!
Mr. Ben Shoveler is going to come down and entertain everyone. He's a very entertaining chap, and he can. It's a bit like Noel Edmonds, a non-famous version of Noel Edmonds. He doesn't need a script. He just stands up and talks, and it just does his thing. We've got Jo Lofthouse, who's bringing her company Isle of Wight makeup and face paint, and she's going to be doing some amazing face art. She can do body art, but I don't think anybody really wants to strip naked and get painted that way, but she can do it if you so wish. She's got a team of makeup artists who can do really amazing face painting. You can have your face painted into Darth Maul or something like that. She's incredible. And we have also most recently announced the appearance of Mr. Robert Sherman, who is extremely well known as the writer of the Doctor Who story which kept the series on air. Because without Dalek, I don't think there would have been a second new series. Dalek was an outstanding story. Obviously, it was adapted from Jubilee, but I think one of the most memorable stories from that era. And of course, as Doctor Who fans, seeing the new Daleks and a Dalek and a Dalek in Doctor Who was absolutely amazing. And Robert's a nice chap. I've met him in Newcastle, and it's so wonderful that he's going to come along to the convention.
I'm really impressed, Adam, that you've managed to get all these great guests.
Well, I just hope that other Doctor Who fans are as well, and they actually buy tickets and come along to the event, because I will say that I'd like to invite some more higher profile guests, but without the ticket sales, there won't be enough money in the pot to do that. So we need people to buy tickets, and so we can. I'm not going to go too mad with the things, but I would like to have an esteemed, maybe an actor or something like that at the event. But say we can't do it without the funds. But we have got a fairly good lineup of very generous people that are going to come along and help us out. So more the merrier. Buy some tickets, support the event, and I don't care where you're travelling from, please do. I know Alan T. Butcher has bought a ticket for it, so it's going to be nice to see at least one person from the mainland come over. It's good for him that he doesn't have a car, because that's the only problem with being bank holiday weekend. It's going to be a quite expensive journey by car. If you come over on the high speed thing, it's park your car in Southampton and come over on the high speed. Much cheaper, and then... you'll have a lot of fun. The other thing I'm going to mention is, I've mentioned that, Yes, I'm going to go through the what they call those things, a flyer, the which somebody pointed out that I misspelt Battlestar Galactica. Sorry about that. I don't know how to spell that, so I spelt it wrong. But so obviously, pardon. We've got Lord of Time mini convention, which features Daleks. I know there are things to be announced on the Dalek prop front, or Anthony Griffiths, who actually builds these props, has got something to announce soon. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing what he's got cut up his sleeve, or in his garage, wherever he builds his stuff. But he has recently built an amazing Davros. You might have seen pictures of his Davros. If you haven't, it will be announced at some point on the FantasyCon page. There is a website which is fantasycon.net. There's also the Facebook page, for search up on Facebook, obviously, that does get shared.
Wasn't fantasycon.com?
Because it's not a business. That's what I thought. It's more of a networking thing.
I'm making a joke.
No, it's not very funny.
.com
it's not very funny. Right then, because I keep on saying that myself.
Yes.
And keep posting the hashtag fantasycon, because one of our PR people, which is VJ Clark, says we must keep remembering to post that particular hashtag. So we've got Lord of Time, which features Dalek, Cyberman, K9, Davros, Cassandra, most of those built by Anthony Griffiths. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast live, which obviously, if you don't bother coming along, Kirby, it'll just be me, Debbie, and Ben. But at least that's of us.
Wait, you can't do a Skype?
I'm not going to be bothered with that. I don't even know what the internet is going to be like there, so I can't promise anything. But it's going to be.
It would be nice if you could do a Skype.
It'd be nice. I can't guarantee anything. I'm not going to say that until.
At least look into it and. I could look into it. It might be.
Roy Spearman, who was on a couple of shows many, many years ago, who's actually looking after our AV side of things, will be the one to talk about that. It's possible, but I'm not promising anything, so I'm not going to announce it. But we will be doing something, even if it's just me, Debbie, and Ben. But don't get upset if that's the case, but I will try. And, of course, it says special guests to be announced. I've already announced some of those special guests, and there'll be more to come, even if they're not Doctor Who related. Festival of Cosplay speaks for itself. Basically, I want people to dress up as Doctor Who characters, but it was so much fun at Island Con seeing people using their imagination in regards to cosplay. One of my favourites was somebody who came along in their own clothes and just wear a hat with a little green pointer because they were playing a sim. I mean, things like that. Absolutely fantastic. So I've given that one away, so they'll come dressed as Sims now. But it's just use your imagination, come along, and it's so lovely to see people letting their hair down and adopting themselves as characters and stuff like that. So we've got it says including Doctor Who, Star Wars, Harry Potter, Star Trek, Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, Battlestar Galactica spelt wrong, Stargate, and anime, of course, and much more. Be original. I think that'd be really, really good. Geek Heaven, of course, is the trading hall of lots of fantastic stuff you can buy for your geeky and nerdy friends and family. So, yeah. Keep watching this space because we'll hopefully have lots of things to announce. And like I say, keep just buy a ticket. You've missed out on the early bird tickets. They were available for a couple of weeks. I did hark on about it quite a lot, but now we're on to general sale tickets. And they can be bought on Eventbrite. Search FantasyCon on Eventbrite, and they're all on. There's lots of different types of tickets you can get, whether it be individual day tickets, family tickets, weekend tickets, or whatever. They're all on there. And, of course, trading tickets as well can be bought via Eventbrite or our page on Eventbrite. So that's all the exciting stuff so far. I must put a shout out for Roy's company, Big and Bold Solutions, who are helping us out for free. So lovely.
Right, Master?
Yes?
I'm going to have to go pretty soon.
I know. I'm just about wrapping up in a minute.
Well, I have another piece of news.
I'll go on then.
I don't know why this didn't show up in Doctor Who news, but maybe it's because it's just an American thing. I don't think this is happening where you are.
Mm-hmm.
But on March 13th, which I believe is a Wednesday, I'm not quite sure, here in theaters, we're going to be seeing... have the ability to see Legopolis.
Ooh.
As a Fathom event.
Yes.
And I'm definitely going. I'm going to be joining the Hulanta watch party. I have to drive halfway across town because even though it's shown in a theater close to me, I want to be with all the other Doctor Who fans. Anyway, it's a Doctor Who classic fan favorite in celebration of the upcoming Blu-ray release. Tom Baker's complete seventh season on Doctor Who, BBC Studios and Fathom Events are giving audiences the chance to see Tom Baker's 100-minute final adventure, Legopolis, on the big screen with new updated special effects. Legopolis features the first appearance of Janet Fielding as companion Tegan, Anthony Anley as the Doctor's archenemy Master, and the regeneration of Fourth Doctor Tom Baker into Fifth Doctor Peter Davison. Fans won't want to miss this one-of-a-kind screening. It will also feature a tour of the Lovell Telescope at Jodrell Bank, the setting for Joe, led by Sarah Sutton and Janet Fielding, and appearance by Tom Baker himself is on this whole thing in the theater. That is going to be so cool.
That's nice. No, that's fantastic. Sorry, I got slightly distracted then because Magic's managed to kick my Live Aid cassettes over in front of the fire, and they're bloody really hot. And I haven't even digitized some of these. One of them I have digitized, which is the one with Queen on it.
Well, move them.
Well, it's been, they're blooming hot. He kicked them in front of the damn fire. They fell out of my bag, and he kicked them in front of the fire. So now I don't know if they're probably ruined. There. Well, so it doesn't matter so much about the one with Queen on it, because I've already digitised that, but I haven't digitised the other one that says Power Station, Mick Jagger and David Bowie, Thompson Twins, Madonna, Eric Clapton, Phil Collins, Duran Duran and Cliff Richard.
Git!
Sorry. Slightly cross with Magic there, because they're quite precious, those the Live Aid tapes are recorded off the radio at the time. Anyway, yes, have you finished?
So when you record them, you were going, my precious...
Right, whowon.co.uk.
Whowon.co.uk?
I've got a funny feeling. I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think this might be the last summer that they're staying open as a store in Ryde. So I'm telling you now, if you want to physically see our longer sponsors, you need to get to the Isle of Wight and get to their shop by the end of August, because I think from then on they're going online only. But they have renewed their sponsorship of the show for another year. Go and see whowon.co.uk, where you can buy... Oh, actually, I don't know if you can buy this thing. This is the 13th Doctor Funko Pop, which I'm quite pleased I managed to get a hold on, because these things never stay available for very long. But 13th Doctor Funko Pop. Cool, isn't it? There's two versions of this. One has the jacket on and one doesn't. I think the one with the jacket on is the rarer one of the two. I've also invested in members of Queen, but Freddie Mercury seems to be a bit difficult to get hold of. And behind me is the original Big Bang Theory Funko Pops. But there's a new wave of Big Bang Theory Funko Pops coming out, which I've bought the whole lot of because they become quite valuable. It's always worth getting stuff that's going to be valuable in the future, isn't it, Kirby?
Mm-hmm.
Not yes. Available at whowon.co.uk, but what is Black Thursday and Power Game, Diary of River Song 5, actually not yet, these are on pre-order, First Doctor's Adventure 3, Chameleon Empire, Macra Terror, which is, I'm looking forward to buying that actually, Series 8 Syndicate Master Plan 2, and War Machines, all of those available to buy soon, latest products, Doctor Magazine.
Who is required?
Yes.
Doctor Who
Shut
is required.
Up. Doctor Who Magazine 535, Doctor Who Special Magazine, Doctor Who Magazine Special, Relative Dimensions, Elysian Space. Blade, what?
You said Relative Dimensions, I said in space.
Yeah. Cricket Men, it's a book by James Goss, New Countermeasures, Hollow King, which is, what is that? It's a countermeasure thing, I can't see the cover. It's the the cast from Remembrance of the Daleks, the soldiers and stuff, because I recognise some of the actors there.
And LeVar, we also need to mention LeVarzi. I really got to run upstairs real fast, and I have to head out the door in 5 minutes.
Yes,
so.
I'm just saying, talking about LeVarzi, they have also renewed their sponsorship for another year, but it's fairly unlikely they're going to be at FantasyCon. But we may well shut up. We may well be getting some stock to sell on their behalf. So that'd be quite good, wouldn't it? So I've got stuff to do. Namely, I have a cup of tea and calm down a bit, because it's been quite fraught. And next time we record, we'll probably be back on a Sunday when we actually have some
people to record with us. And it's likely to be the 17th of March.
Oh, so not this coming Sunday.
I'm working. Oh, I've got a show to shoot. But it might be the next. I'll have a word with She Who Must Be Obeyed and see what happens. It could possibly be that evening. But I've got a show to film, but I'm not in the evening.
Well, let us know soonish.
The show will be at 4:30, so it'll still be on the time we were recording. So it'll be the 17th of March.
Okay.
When we'll be watching and recording and reviewing. I've forgotten which one.
Androids of Tara.
Oh, the Androids of Tara. That's it. Well, anyway, so hang on. Let's see if anybody has commented. Nobody has.
17th March. Isn't that St. Patrick's Day?
Well, blimey, no, I'm not Irish. Anyway, so until next time, thank you for listening, watching, and taking part in the show. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation, no copyright infringement intended.